Welcome to You're Making It Worse. We're here, we're queer, who cares? I'm Elliot Glazer.
And I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
Textual healing.
So, RuPaul of
Mother
drag
Mother.
Fame, RuPaul recently launched an online bookstore, which is causing controversy over some of the titles that it's selling. So the bookstore is called All Stora, great catchy name, and it prides itself on being an independent author-owned marketplace offering over 10 million titles.
We should also add that it started as the past guest of this podcast, Eric Cervini's book organization called Shop Queer, and then RuPaul came in, partnered with Eric, and then they changed the name to All Stora. So that's the journey.
Oh, nice.
Of
oh, great.
All Stora.
Well, I'm sure he got a massive check for that. But anyway, the mission is under fire given some of the titles that social media users found on the site, including authors known for their anti-LGBTQ+ U stances. Riley Gaines, Robbie Starbuck, Kirk Cameron. Most of these sound made up except for Kirk Cameron.
Robbie Starbuck.
Robbie Starbuck. How is that possibly a real person? You can also find Mein Kampf on there.
Wow.
Now, All Stora did have a response to this, you know, classic, you know, semi-cancel culture response on social media. All Stora said, "With the help of our community, we flagged certain books as contrary to our core values. All proceeds from these titles will go towards protecting diverse literature and marginalized communities from book bans through the Rainbow Book Bus." That was a disclaimer. The company didn't immediately... What I like about this is that the company didn't immediately kowtow to social media faux mm-hmm. activists. A spokesman for the company, when speaking, giving an interview to The Advocate, explained that the company believes in the importance of understanding ideologies of hate to combat them effectively, and likens its approach to that of university libraries and other online marketplaces by choosing to carry all books. In an effort to mitigate the potential harm of specific books, All Stora has introduced a community flagging system and donates all the proceeds to certain, you know, liberal organizations, which I thought was actually, I will be honest, when I first read this, I'm like, I guess it is a little weird that they're selling Mein Kampf. That was the one to me that I'm like, all right, I don't think you have to sell Mein Kampf.
right.
That said, like...
Weird.
That said, I think their response is like so perfect and
Can
spot on.
Can I add in something
that, like,
here too that Eric
sure.
said in his apology that he sent out from Astoria, where he basically described the thinking behind a lot of it. He said, "We decided to respond to book bans with radical inclusivity, and that it was his decision. As a historian, I understand that even the more hateful books can have educational value." And he did this to sort of. He directed his team to add all 10 million books that were available for the retailer that they use in the English language, no matter their contents, to the library. But that is where he said was his mistake. And so they've since done exactly what you've said and corrected it and made sure that there's a process in which certain books are flagged. And it's really interesting in terms of business perspective, because all of these book retailers essentially use the same retailer Barnes and Noble, all of them use this one sort of resource of a library of sort of publishing and buying books buying books. And it's one database essentially. And you have a choice of what you can choose and what you can't. And it's, I mean, on one hand, I feel really bad because Eric is a friend and I think he did the right thing by stepping forward and apologizing and saying this was a mistake on their end. And I think it also is an example of a small business, because it really was, Shop Queer was a small business started by Eric and his partner Adam, and it was just the two of them, and it expanded to something much larger. And when a small business grows like that, there are growing pains, and I think this was a part of their growing pains, and they definitely have learned from this experience. And you know, hopefully they become a voice. They already were a voice, and they're already having this bus travel around the country. They're on tour right now to places where LGBTQ books are being banned left and right, and they're going there and actually, you know, having these books available for places where they're being banned. So I think that's a very good thing that we can support. You know what I mean?
I mean, I think the response is spot on. I think the I think it would be hypocritical to respond to book bans by banning our own books, even though I obviously recognize that I think hateful messages are a little bit different than inclusivity. But, you know, if we're taking a very neutral stance, I think that banning books is usually a bad practice.
Yeah.
But I you know, again, as always, for me, it's just like the absurdity of some... some sad buffoon sitting in, you know, Dubuque, Iowa, who goes online and is like, how dare RuPaul sell Mein Kampf, as if anyone in the world is like, you know, Googling Mein Kampf. I got to buy Mein Kampf. And they stumble upon RuPaul's website and they're like, oh yeah, it's covered in rainbow flags and shit. And they're like, yeah, I'll buy it from here. You know, all proceeds go to, you know, LGBT child organizations support, and they're like, oh, you.
I do want to say one thing, though, that this is something that I think maybe the writer in me or the historian part of me, the person who loves history in me, is responding to something like this. But I think there's value in reading things that you don't agree with. And I'm not saying go out and buy Mein Kampf. But what I'm saying is there's value in learning and reading certain books, like, for example, I'll throw out like Tom Sawyer or Huckleberry Finn or books that are clearly dated and use language that is not up to date to where we are today and has values in it that probably aren't very good. And yet it teaches you something about history and about how people lived and about where we've come from and how we can be better and all of these great things that I'm just sort of like, If you exclude all of those books, even from retailers, well, then it becomes. I mean, that said, I don't think Kirk Cameron's book has any sort of value.
That's yeah. right. That's what I was going to say. Like, we don't need Kirk Cameron's book, and there is something very funny to the oversight of RuPaul, you know, endorsed book house selling Kirk Cameron. But ultimately, like, what I liked about this response too was that it was measured and timely, and they digested it instead of racing to just kind of like put band-aids over everything. It was like, wait, let's acknowledge what's happening, assess what's really going on here, and decide how we can, you know, attend to this without just trying to shut people up and look and come out looking good.
Well, I mean, I'll summarize it by saying it's faux hapless internet outrage followed usually by faux hapless corporate apologies, and everyone sees through both. Mm-hmm. We see through both the horseshit online activism that, you know, all it is clicking a like and clicking retweet, which is fundamentally meaningless. And then the corporation that's like, we want to extend our deepest, most profound apologies, and everyone's like, this is horseshit too.
I agree with you. However, the people who are outraged do have a point in that. When a retailer, especially an online retailer, has such a large expanse, and they're utilizing a third party to be the one that's essentially selling a lot of your books, and, you know, you're just getting a cut of the profits, it does take away, and I'll say this, from small bookstores. And so if you want to actually do something and you do support, you know, the curation of books in bookstores and people who know books and want to sell books, go to a local bookstore. Don't fucking go to Barnes & Noble. Don't buy your book from Amazon. Join a Book of the Month club. I'm a member of the Book of the Month club, and they curate 5 selections each month where you get a little book. And I'm just, I think there's, if you really feel passionate about this and you want to make your fucking TikTok video, well, then make sure you're making that TikTok video from a local bookstore like here in LA, Skylight or something like that, where they are actually, and yes, the books are a little bit more expensive, but they're more expensive because they're doing a service that is dying, and they're not just doing mass profits so that, you know, Barnes & Noble's making money off Mein Kampf too. And this Skylight isn't making money off Mein Kampf. So go support go support Skylight. Yeah.
So I guess for all of our listeners who would like to buy Kirk Cameron's quote, "The Fox, the Fair, and the Invention Scare," go support your local bookstore.
Oh, Kirk Cameron, what a douche.
Not even joking.
We are joined today by my good friend Dubs Weinblatt. Hello, Dubs.
Hello, how are you?
Great, wonderful. Okay, so I'm just going to peek behind the curtains. We had some technical difficulties before. So if we refer to any of that, that's what that is. But you're back and everything is wonderful. Now, I wanted to talk about, because you have a great podcast called Thank You for Coming Out. And I want to know a little bit about the origins of Thank You for Coming Out.
Thank you. Yeah. I'll try to be even more succinct this time. How about that? It started as an improv show in New York City in 2015. There was no queer show happening at the theater that I frequented, The Magnet. And so they asked me if I wanted to produce something. So I said yes. Then and this part is crucial, actually, that it was they gave us a Monday night at 10:30 slot, yes. which is miserable.
A dream slot. Dream slot. Right.
So it sold out. So then we tried it again because I didn't know if it was a fluke, and it sold out again. So then we kept producing it. I kept producing it, expanded to the Pit. So I had two shows a month. And then Bobby Hankinson, who is a comedian, storyteller, producer in New York City, works at Schnepp's Media, which owns Gay City News. And they approached me and said they wanted to turn my show into a podcast. And so I adapted the form monologue to improv mm-hmm. to monologue to conversation. And the rest is history.
Nice. What have you found from people's coming out stories? Like, I feel like coming out stories now, especially with, I guess, the younger generation, they're not like ours. They're definitely not like ours. So, like, what have you found over talking with people about their coming out stories? What has changed?
Yeah, that's a really, really, really great question. Well, something that's changed on my end was I've now added the question coming out or coming into self, because a lot of folks, right, there's not this like quintessential coming out moment. There's more of like just coming into oneself. And admittedly, I haven't interviewed many people of younger generations, and that is a goal of this season, is to get a better sense of what it's like now as younger kids are coming up into the movement.
I feel like younger kids now are just like, it's almost like they don't even broach it. It's really interesting. There's such a schism between like millennials and I even include Gen Z and then whatever comes after that. They're so, it's just so like part of their nature, I guess. I have a friend who's a teacher and he always talks about how he teaches in Manhattan, like at a sort of a school for the gifted. And he always talks about how his kid is so weird to me that his kids who are middle school age, they are constantly like questioning their gender and either like changing their gender or their name or their pronouns, but they never want to be gay. He's like, why not? He like runs the GSA too. And he's like, y'all come to the GSA. And they're like, no, just like changing my name. Like they change their name. It's like a daily thing for them. And there's no judgment. He and of course the staff are as liberal and progressive and accepting as possible, but it's such a distinctly different generational vibe, I would say.
Yeah, I think that for sure that is definitely a thing. And it's also, you're talking about like progressive Manhattan East Coast, you know, just like wanting to name as people so lovingly call the rest of the country, flyover states. Yeah. It's not necessarily as rainbows, pun intended, and butterflies, right?
Right.
But I love that, Elliot, because it's like a very distinct shift from at least when I was in high school. I graduated in 2003. And like there were so few out people in my school. And so yeah, it's for sure different, but there's still a lot of challenges for young folks.
Wait, definitely. Are you implying that it's not easy to be gender-forming in rural Kentucky?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say that again, Brent. Sorry, I think you cut out there for a second.
No, it's okay.
Well, what would you say?
It was a joke, but it doesn't work now.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. It's fine. So the other thing that I think is, I mean, interesting about that conversation is I never subscribe. I mean, even like, I think when I was growing up, gay was the only option. But as I got older, I definitely I mean, even though I don't think I'm anything other than gay, I also don't I feel like gay is so limiting in that, like, I'm a part of the queer experience. You know what I mean? Like, I identify more with queer than I ever did with sort of gay. And I think, I mean, would you find, Dubs, that, like, more people are sort of going in that direction? I feel like they are.
I do see a trend where people are using a more expansive terms. And also, a lot of people don't even want labels. They're just like, I'm just me. I am, however I wish to be and don't want to be, like, beholden to some kind of box. But I just think about, kind of like the power of words and the power of identity words and, like, being able to find oneself in those words and then feeling really limited by them also. And so I think it's like a constant conversation of that balance and, getting to name our own identities versus someone telling us, who they think we should be.
Yeah. For sure. For sure. I mean, and that's like that. I think part of me is also like, I remember I posted this video recently about Bea Arthur, and she was talking. She did some video. She did an interview with like Gay Times or something, like some ridiculous interview in like the late 90s, early aughts or something. I don't know. And she was talking about how I love gay people. I think I'm like a icon of the gays or whatever, because they're fabulous hairdressers. And she's definitely like, she's definitely it's not the most modern of way of speaking. But the comment section was the most interesting, because I talked about in my comment about how, I like being queer and all these things. And there were so many people who were like, I'm not queer, I'm gay. But they were all like, It seemed like 40 plus dudes basically, who were like basically aggressively being like, A, fuck her for like making me a hairdresser, and B, I'm gay, not queer. And it just seemed very sort of like aggro Trumpy in a way. You know what I mean?
Wait, was this
old
article?
No, this was like, I mean, I'll post it when this goes up, but it was an interview that she did, like a television interview that she did with some gay TV video thing in London, I don't know, a long time ago. But she just mentioned that, and then the comment section was definitely hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely feels like there's a divide there too, where, the idea of queer identity or like this all encompassing thing that, anybody could really fall under, depending on, a lot of different, potential beliefs or feelings or whatever attitudes. It's a wide umbrella. So I can understand why, older people would just have a knee-jerk reaction to it, because it's just not their thing.
Yeah, well, and the word queer was used as a slur for so long. And so folks from an older generation really do have a visceral reaction to hearing that word. And I also think that, like gay and lesbian folks of older generations fought so hard for their place kind of in society that they're, this isn't speaking for all of them, but there's a sense of feeling like threatened. Like you're gonna ruffle the feathers. You're gonna get our rights taken, and so there's also that kind of vibe too that's happening, where folks are like, we're just gay. We're not any of that other stuff. Mm-hmm. We're just regular old plain gay.
Yeah. What do you think, Brent?
So, what do I think about what?
About that? About the whole queer gay conversation.
You know, when it comes to terminology, I don't dive into this stuff. It's. I guess I've always thought of myself as gay. I have no problem with whatever someone, however someone wants to define themselves. But I also struggle to understand why it's hard, why it's limiting, and why it's challenging. And my mind doesn't work that way. I don't think in those terms, and so it's hard for me to imagine why it's, I'm happy to use whatever terminology anyone wants, and I understand that, people might not always want to say gay or whatever, but I just don't.
I want to give Dubs a little background. We chuckled at, I don't think in those terms, Dubs, because it's a Susan Sontag quote from an interview that we obsessively quote. And so so that's why we chuckle, not for any other reason, just for clarity there. But speaking of labels, one of the things that I find not amusing, but it's definitely a mouthful. On your website, Dubs, you have that you're Ohio born and raised, now Brooklyn living, sober, genderqueer, non-binary, trans Jew, which is probably like the label of all labels. It's the ongoing label in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Please tell me.
My label is boring, so I don't know how that compares. But.
I mean, how do you like? How do you fit that all into sort of like a first date situation?
Ooh, good. Well, that would mean I'm going on dates. but hypothetically, on a date, I don't know. I kind of waffle between maybe not necessarily disclosing all the things at first because I want someone not to get turned off by maybe my sobriety or turned off by my transness or my Jewishness. There are so many aspects of my identity that could be a turnoff to people. But I'd rather just put it out there and have it be a filter. And like, if you can't handle me at all my labels, you don't deserve me at any of them or whatever, you know?
Definitely.
And maybe that's why I don't have any dates. Who knows?
what's of that of those labels? What's the one that is sort of like the conversation starter at a party, if you will? What is the one that people are like, "Oh, interesting."
It depends on the party, but probably sober.
Like,
aren't you bored? Why aren't you drinking? What's the deal?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, depending on the party, it could be my transness or my Ohio-ness.
I find Midwestern is like, for me at least, is the conversation starter a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Saying I'm from St. Louis, those Midwestern, the similarities in Midwestern stuff. I mean, it's a constant sort of like thing that's discussed. And it almost, I think in some ways, especially, I noticed it in New York. I definitely notice it in Los Angeles. There is some judgment towards being where I'm from sometimes if I say that, just because then they immediately think, oh, your parents voted for Trump, didn't they? And they did not, for the record, they did not. But there definitely is that judgment of you must come from these type of people. Do you get that?
I don't think I do. No, not that I'm remembering. Not necessarily like a Trump thing, but like a small town, like you're from Ohio. It's like, well, I'm from Columbus, which is like very progressive.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Columbus is now I feel like I read or heard that Columbus is becoming some sort of like gay, you know, pocket of Ohio. Is that a reality or is that just gay or tourism companies pushing?
No, it's true. Columbus is like super progressive in that way. Whenever I go back, I'm always blown away by the number of like queer owned, any kind of like establishment. And so many of the coffee shops and bars have, menstruation products if they have gendered bathrooms in both bathrooms, which I don't even see that in New York City. So they definitely are they're onto something.
Wow.
Yeah. I let me ask you a question, Dubs, because you've heard a lot of coming out stories. Is there one that really like stands out to you as sort of the preeminent example of coming out, good or bad?
Is it mine? No, it's not. It's not at all. Mine's boring as fuck. Go ahead.
No, it's Elliot's. No, just kidding. It's
Yeah, it's it.
I don't know. That's a really good question.
Well, while you think of that, Dubs, I mean, I would love to know, like, I don't think we ever talked about on the podcast our own coming out stories. Have we? I don't believe we have.
I don't know if we have. I guess we've just had.
I will say they're pretty quick. Yeah. I distinctly remember getting booked on a It Gets Better type show to tell my coming out story. And then they got pissed at me because I didn't have one because I was always a flaming homosexual. And I never had to come out because it was blatantly obvious. So I mm-hmm. they gave me that $50 very reluctantly that night. Brent, what was your coming out story? Mm-hmm.
If you remember, my coming out story was so dramatic free, but because it was in a certain era, I thought it was supposed to be full of drama. So I got mad at my parents for not caring more. Mm. So I came out and they're like, oh, okay. As I've told you guys many times, to me, the discomfort of coming out was acknowledging sexuality, yeah. More so than acknowledging being gay. It was like just inherently disgusting that I've had sex drives, which made me uncomfortable. And then, yeah, it was so easy that I remember like just being annoyed because, you know, you learn growing up that, you know, it's supposed to be dramatic and they're supposed to kick you out for a couple days or whatever. I was living out of the house anyway at the time. I was in college. But yeah, I remember being like, oh, I'm out of here. I like left dinner early for whatever reason. And like,
what about you?
You know, what was yours, Elliot?
Mine was not too exciting. I was also I came out to my parents first and they were like, okay, like pretty cool with it. And then I waited until I got to college to come out to friends. I did that mostly through on the phone or on AIM. Because I just wanted to just get it over with. But again, like to what Debs was saying before, I never had an interest in making even like at 19, I just didn't feel a desire to be like, you know, the world needs to know. I've never had an interest in announcing it in that way, which I think what sort of brought the three of us together. It's not out of being self-deprecating or not caring about our identities, but just not leading with it because it just seemed like not the most crucial part of our personalities, I guess. I don't know if that sounds problematic, but I don't care.
What about you, Dubs?
I don't think it's problematic. And then I think that it's like part of what I think queer liberation is for like all of us to get to be the kind of gay people we want to be. Mm-hmm. So if it's like you don't want to lead with that, then that's great. And you shouldn't have to. But I want us to like make space for all of us to live however we want to live. And I feel like that's the point. I came out as gay when I was 20. I was basically just like a miserable, drunken mess. And my friend Dolce was like, you got to tell me what's going on here. Because I was like a raging alcoholic and was mean to everybody. And so I came out, I was really scared to come out to her. And I wrote it down on a post-it because I couldn't even fathom saying it out loud. She was
like
lovely
in that
and
episode of Sex and the City with the post-it. That's you.
That's exactly right.
That's
yeah.
Your Dubs.
That
was, yep.
I inspired that scene.
I'm sorry. I'm gay.
Right. Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> post-it. And so, and turns out she was secretly dating a woman at the time. I know it was a scandal.
Did she put that on a post-it note?
And
too?
Then, my parents were very accepting. My brother was like, I just thought you were sporty, which is, I think is very funny. And then like 10 years later is when I like came into myself as a trans person. Cause it really took me that length of time to understand and kind of untangle the like sexual orientation, gender identity piece. I didn't know that they were two different things. And so I, similar to what you were saying, Elliot, about just like getting it over with, like once I like realized that I was like a genderqueer non-binary person, I just like told everybody. I like made appointments. I was like, you got to know this thing. And it was just, it was so much easier because for the first time I held everything in for 20 years and it made me miserable. And so, I had gone through it once and I had the tools and was also almost 30 years old. So could hold my own in a way that I didn't feel like I could when I was 20. Mm-hmm. But to answer your question, Brent, about the like quintessential story, I don't think it's one story. What I actually think is the most special is how similar all the stories are. Mm. We've had 5 seasons, over 100 guests, and no matter what identity someone holds, there's always something that's connecting the stories. And that's what I think is so beautiful and incredible and why I love doing the podcast, because it's like I could be talking to someone who we share zero identities And I'm like in tears because our stories are the exact same. Mm. And it's just, it creates such an incredible, like, strong sense of belonging and, you know, like feeling seen in a way that's like pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's also weird because I thought you were just going to say me. Just what I figured.
But, and also Elliot.
I really, you know, I remember when I was younger because I wanted the drama. I think I had the similar response to Brent, other than I wanted someone to be shocked. You know what I mean? Or like, I wanted someone to like be emotional about me being gay, and just no one gave a fuck. And it was just like, and then I kept being like, but you're all Mormon. What's wrong with you? You should hate me. Like I wanted someone just to do something to me just so I could talk about it with people and complain about it. But no one would. No one would.
There was part of me too that kind of want, I kind of wanted to pick a fight here and there, or try to, you know, take a stand in a sense, but I never really, I got called faggot mm-hmm. once, like holding hands with my boyfriend at the time. And I was like, I'm going to, and I mean, I was wearing like a pink button down shirt, well, but whatever.
And that person but who called I was you like, faggot was Brent. Yes.
No, I was really, I was like, I'm going to go beat them up. Like I got Ooh. Really mad.
And, was that in the city? Like, where was that?
Yeah.
Island?
No, Manhattan. In New York. Manhattan. Okay. Yeah. Wow. And I was like, the fuck do they think I was going to go beat them up? But like, I don't know. I never really had like to be fair, like I've always tried to, I think like a lot of queer people tried to follow the footsteps to where I would be surrounded so that I wouldn't mm-hmm. feel out of place.
I have one life rule, which is never pick a fight with someone who uses the word faggot. And so that's usually
I guess you're not going to pick a fight with yourself.
I suppose so. It's at least
I also find Elliot, your response to beginning. I mean, you're someone who will take that massage gun on your neighbor's wall to tell them to shut up. So like, you definitely have a response that if someone calls you faggot, I feel like you take that massage gun and put it right up their ass.
Yes, dubs up their ass.
Who's a faggot now? Are you relaxed? Are you relaxed?
There's a reason my nickname is Street Justice.
So funny. Well, Dubs, this was fantastic chatting with you. Where can people find the podcast, find you on social media, all the good stuff?
Yeah, this was so great. Thanks for having me. I'm on Instagram at Dubs Weinblatt and at Thank You For Coming Out. Mm-hmm. And my websites are dubsweinblatt.com and thankyouforcomingout.com.
Ooh, you got thankyouforcomingout.com. That, you got in that early.
I really did. Yeah. I really did.
Wow. I love that. Smart. Sell it for $1 million someday to HRC or something. I don't know.
I will.
Yeah.
And another thing. Elliot, you had a story that popped up a couple months ago, I think, over your holiday season break in Florida. And I'm obsessed with it. Alan's obsessed with it. Why don't you tell our listeners what happened?
Sure. I was just visiting my parents and just on the apps very casually
swiping
chatting.
Away.
And, yeah. Mm-hmm. And this
meeting men. Meeting
one gentleman was very aggressive in trying to set up an encounter of some kind. And I wasn't particularly interested, but he was nice enough to talk to. But he was just, you know, he was pretty aggressive sending videos. And I'm like, I'm not returning any. I'm just not into that, into like videos and stuff.
You're not into videos? Yeah. So what are you doing videos?
I'm not someone who makes, I'm not somebody who like makes or watches homemade sex videos. I've
The videos on Grindr are actually, they're grainy and a little bit weird. But let's also throw out an important thing. Elliot, you were in Florida. You recognized this guy from Los Angeles. And one of the reasons you recognize him was because you follow him on Instagram.
Yes, we were friends. But
very vague social media friends. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. But anyway, so all of that being said, we just chatted. It was fine. And we did not meet up because I was just not really feeling it. But it was so funny because I was really like getting hit with a lot of the videos, and you know, it's like, that's pretty intimate that's why I have no interest in it. It's like, it's so intimate, and I'm like, oof, I would never put my own thing out there like that.
I think you need to talk to your therapist
about that. That's true. Anyway, all that being said, the next day he did show up on my Instagram, even though he never really falls into my algorithm or never shows up in it. I'd forgotten they would even like really bit followed each other. And he showed up in endless pictures and like videos of him getting proposed to and like celebrating with his fiance. And this, like, I'm obviously happy for the man, you know, he looks very much in love, and I'm happy for their blessed union. But it was so funny to me that, like, we've gotten to a point where the night before he's either proposing or getting proposing. That's right. He proposed.
He proposed.
The night before he proposed to his fiance, he's like sending me just endless
pictures
unsolicited
of his tootie ho.
Or as you wrote in the doc, his dookie ho.
Yeah.
And it's just, it was just so like tickling to me, because it's just, wow. I mean, that's just where we are. It's just so, such two opposite ends of the spectrum be just like really into just sending, you know, gratuitous stuff that is, again,
I also
in
want
my
to say,
opinion, just like intimate, and then being like,
Alan, for our listeners, that gust of air that you heard was just Elliot's air conditioning turning on,
air conditioning,
and not,
even though it's 56
and not his cootie hole blowing out from excitement.
Yeah, right.
Just FYI, I won't cut that one out because it's too much.
Alan, what do you think?
It's interesting.
Of all
I mean, I think it's strange that I mean, for an adult to, I mean, because he's what? How old is he? Probably in his 30s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for an adult to be doing that, it's just a strange day. Wait till the next day, at least, which I guess maybe he did wait till the next day. Or, I don't know. I mean,
he waited till the next day.
He proposed the next day, but he was sending Elliot tootie ho pics the night.
But
before.
It does.
I have no
it
judgment.
It does remind
it's,
me of something that I did
it.
Once where I used a moment in order to get a moment, if you will. I was a teenager, though. Let me just put that out there. I was a child when I did this. And
profoundly different.
And my grandfather just died. No, my step-grandpa.
No.
And he died. We had just, this is so funny. We had just moved in. So my family, we were always very poor. And then real quickly, we came into some good money. So we bought a house. You know, we bought a house real quick. And we were like, we're going to move up in the world a little bit. So we bought this beautiful house. And then we were all broke again. And my grandpa then started to, you know, pass away. And so he died in the house. We'd only been in the house for like a month. And I had subsequently lost my virginity to this guy that I had been kind of hooking up with like maybe 3 months before my grandpa died. And so when my step-grandpa eventually died, I mean, I was upset, sure, but I wasn't like beside myself because I knew him, but I didn't know him. You know what I mean? And, but I was like, you know, my friend or this guy that I had lost my virginity to, he came over and we were hanging out and he was like really aggressively being sympathetic to me. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I should be a little bit more sad. And so I just started to be more sad. And I used it to get, you know, some DD, some
get
moments
laid,
of.
Get
yeah.
For you.
And so I'm just.
That is wildly different and perfectly fair.
I don't know.
I think that's perfectly fair.
Listen, I don't judge. I don't
See,
judge him
I,
for.
This is where I disagree. I think you can't.
I think you can judge
people under some circumstances. Alan. I thought Alan was, you know, Alan is, you know, very fair and very neutral about these things and often reminds us that, like, you know, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors. You don't know what situation people have. That makes sense to me, even when I'm naysaying it. But I think this is a situation. Sorry, Elliot, I'll let you.
Yeah, please, please. No.
This is a situation where I think it's okay to say, if you are so distracted the night before you propose to someone by sending out dookie ho pics of yourself to strangers or social media strangers
like,
or whatever,
like acquaintances.
Then I don't think that's a really great relationship. Yeah. I don't. You know, and I'm sure someone out there is
I don't think it's necessarily a statement on their relationship. I think it's a statement on this person. And because I mean, you know, you can have an open relationship and still be a horrible person. And so I feel like this person is probably a little selfish in wanting everything immediately, and he wants the husband and the side hustle in the same day he gets the husband.
It was just very funny to see, like, we're crying, I'm crying, everyone, you know, your nuptials, like, everyone's, it's so emotional, which of course it is, I understand it, but it was just so weird for me, like a fucking rando, to be like, you were just, like, shooting off videos to me
last
night.
What was he doing in these videos?
Unsolicited. Just jerking off. Mm-hmm. And again, like, I'm just like, he's lovely and attractive, but I'm just like, it's just so icky to me, that vibe, that like hypersexual. It's, I don't know. I don't respond to it that way.
I don't think it's icky. I think it's very, I mean, I think that's very healthy.
Well, when it's one-sided, that's what I mean.
If you're not getting the yes anding of the situation,
that's all I'm saying. And again, it's just for me, like, it's just weird that evening he's like, you know, and I'm one person, I don't know who he's talking to, and then the next day it's like, love is real, you know, I've been swept away, Cupid's arrow, and I'm just like, okay, like, it's just such a funny place to be where
I've told actually a lot of our straight friends this story. I just find it really fascinating, and I'm kind of curious to get their response. And I think a lot of our friends, I think, are comparable to, you know, maybe a little bit between myself and Alan. I'm obviously definitely more cynical when it comes to open relationships, although I certainly see the utility. And Alan, I think, is much more fair-minded. But most of our friends, are somewhere within that range. But every time I've told this story, people have been, like, gobsmacked, jaw on the floor.
It's weird. Like, wow. I mean, if he comes to you and says, my grandpa just died, be forewarned. He's going for one thing.
What would your aunt say? Brent, what would your Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's show?
Great reminder to watch Kirk Cameron's new documentary, The Homeschool Awakening.
My Aunt Joanne would say, I stand with Elliot in that he runs hot and it can be humid. I'm just trying to come up with a way to legitimize my use of air conditioning.
Air conditioning callback.
What about Ann?
I love sending your Uncle Ray videos of my cookies. I make the best cookies. Always like.
She does. I have no doubt.
They're so moist.
I have no doubt. They are moist. And if you want to hear more about cookies, listen to our Patreon.
It's true.
That probably isn't the greatest selling point, but hey, fair enough. Whatever.
We should make cookies one day and post a video to our Patreon.
I hope we should not like my Christmas cookies.
Yeah, your Christmas cookies.
Oh, yeah, do Christmas in February.
Chocolate
or
covered
March.
With jizz. Mm-hmm. The icing literally looked like jizz.
Delicious.
Brent's Bakery.